The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On this episode of News World, in 2007, Texas was faced with a crisis of overcrowded prisons and a projected $2 billion demand to remedy this problem. Right on Crime, part of the Texas Public Policy Foundation, supported an investment of $241 million into alternative sentencing, expanded access to parole, and evidence-based programs aimed at improving the success rate for those reentering society or on supervision. As a result, 11 prisons closed while simultaneously reducing crime to the lowest level since the 1960s. Instead of spending $2 billion, Texas saved $4 billion. So I'm really pleased to welcome my guest, Brett Tolman, Executive Director of Right on Crime. Brett, welcome, and thank you for joining me on Newt's World.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Great to be with you.
Before we get into Right on Crime, you've actually had a very interesting legal career. Could you walk us kind of through all the different things you've done?
People ask me how I did what I did, but I think I was more lucky than good. But I came out of law school as a federal prosecutor for about a decade, and then I wanted to go back to Washington, D.C., and I served as counsel and then ultimately chief counsel over crime and terrorism in the United States Senate, and got to see how, you know, laws were made, but also to see the challenges as I worked on national security issues, and got to see things like interrogations in Guantanamo Bay, all kinds of interesting things. And then President Bush was kind enough to make me the U.S. attorney in Utah, and I did that for about 4 years. And the last case I did in the courtroom as a trial lawyer was prosecuting the kidnapper of Elizabeth Smart, which I'm very proud that he's not on the streets, as I think he would harm individuals if he were out. And that was my journey, I guess, through the criminal justice system. And I became a prosecutor because as a young kid, my oldest sister was kidnapped and raped in college. Just a devastating moment for our family. And I'm happy to say that she's doing terrific today and a wonderful mother. And what a traumatic thing. And I think that inspired me to be a prosecutor. And I was going to try to find bad guys and put them in jail. But here I am now, 25 years in the criminal justice system. And I'm actually fighting for changes in the criminal justice system because we have done a poor job. Our recidivism rate is 70%+ still. And that to me is a measure of failure in any corporate or government standard we might apply.
Well, can you talk about the federal supervised release program?
It's really fascinating to me that you take, for example, in the federal system, every individual that gets out of prison is supervised for roughly 5 years. And it's an inordinate amount of money that's devoted to supervision. And right now, there is, however, data and research that shows if you supervise folks longer than 18 months, you actually can increase their recidivism. I tell people all the time, I don't want the left making changes to the criminal justice system. They don't do it right. They don't do it based on data and research and what works, like you referenced in Texas. They do it based on emotion. They'll call for defunding the police, or they'll call for whatever drastic change. But with supervision, it's one of the last remaining issues up on Capitol Hill, where both sides are saying, hey, let's incentivize them like we did in the First Step Act. If they'll do what they're supposed to, then we can shorten their term of supervision and it'll reduce crime and it'll give them the hope and opportunity to do the things they're supposed to get jobs, go to school, work on their family and their well-being.
You know, we should explain to everybody that recidivism is the rate at which people go back to prison. So if you can reduce recidivism, you're reducing the number of prisoners you have because they're not breaking the law. And so this is something I originally got tied into by Chuck Colson, who had served time in prison coming out of Watergate and who had become totally committed to faith-based models and to thinking through how do we take somebody who has broken the law, help them change their life, and help them prepare to live once they left prison without ever going back. Now, I am curious for a second, what's your theory of why is it that after 18 months, supervision actually becomes destructive?
I think it's a number of factors, but it really boils down to two things. One, the likelihood of minor infractions increases. And when I say minor, you know, when you're on supervision, you have to check in with your supervising agent. You have certain things you can and can't do. You can't travel out of your jurisdictions. All of those things can cause a violation to occur. So you have an exponentially higher chance as they get back into regular life to make a minor infraction, which then they can be revoked on their supervision and brought back in. The other issue is, it is incredibly exhausting. Most of the individuals that you talk to, now keep in mind, they've served their sentence, in a lot of cases, lengthy sentences, so they're out. This supervision is so long that it causes quite the discouragement and frustration, and they're always constantly feeling like people are looking over their shoulders. It's conservative states who have taught us this. It's states like Oklahoma and Georgia and Mississippi that have shortening their supervision and getting better results.
It's ironic. The liberal states are refusing to put people in jail, and so they put violent criminals back on the street. The conservative states put people in jail, but then if they behave correctly, they get them out of jail. It's the opposite of what you would think. And it turns out that the liberal approach to not pay attention to criminals like New York, to have no bail, to allow people back on the street for the 25th or 30th time. That model doesn't work. But a model that says we are going to lock you up, you are going to serve your time, but then we're going to help you reenter society seems to have a pretty dramatically different effect.
Yeah. And Mr. Speaker, I could not say it better. I think your voice is so important on this, but you and others who understand that there's a role of redemption in the criminal justice system that's been lost in a lot of areas, and especially lost in our blue left, you know, liberal cities. They believe there should not be any accountability. And so if there's no accountability, you never have to think about redemption. But there should be accountability and people should be on notice that we don't allow lawbreakers in this country, but we will provide you to move beyond your worst day or your worst decisions if you'll apply yourself. And we give them opportunities. If you don't give them those opportunities, then there's no redemption. And I'm fascinated by things like Boston right now. In Boston, they've only had two homicides. That is such a large major city. It's 82% down from where it was just a couple of years ago.
What seems to have done that?
I've been digging into it, and they're taking a faith-based approach. They're using members of the community and faith-based membership to actually intervene with their juveniles, to step in, let them know they know about some crimes that they've committed, and if they don't change their ways, then they will pursue them. And so they're almost giving them a form of redemption prior to, and they're noticing that these crimes are going down. I contrast that to what we see in New York and Chicago and other areas where they don't want to arrest anyone. And I think to myself, that truly is the definition of insanity at play right before our eyes. They're doing the same thing that they've been doing, and they're expecting different results. The violence is rising, and they're not redeeming any of their youth.
I campaigned with Giuliani back when he ran for mayor, and he took a city which had an enormous murder rate and lowered it every single year, and ultimately created one of the safest cities in the world. And we knew how to do it. Mayor Bloomberg came along, sustained the Giuliani policies. They continued to work. The murder rate continued to decline. And then liberals took over. And within 3 years, they had gotten rid of every single thing which worked. And the crime rate went back up. The city got to be worse. It got to be more, frankly, much less safe. It's sort of like you try to teach children, it's okay to touch the stove once, but you ought to learn that it's hot. And these folks, they don't seem capable of learning.
I think that's a perfect historical reference that is really tragic. And so much credit is deserved by Mayor Giuliani. And he was a former U.S. attorney, and he was a federal prosecutor. And there's many of us out there that have realized we want to be tough on crime. We should be tough on crime as a country. But if that doesn't mean lowering your crime rates and reducing your recidivism, then you're not really tough on crime. To me, it's another chapter of the weaponization of our justice system, what's happening in these liberal cities. Because what they're saying is, because it's politically expedient, I'm going to send out a message to my community, for example, in San Francisco, we're not going to prosecute these certain types of crimes. And once they send that out, boom, all of a sudden, massive rise in those types of crimes. And the population is getting tired of it. The people that it hurts the most, though, are our minority communities, our poorer communities. And that, to me, is the weaponization of the justice system on a macro level across this country that I sure hope that we're going to reverse. And I'm starting to see some reversals, because even some on the left are saying, hey, this is outrageous. We need to stop it.
When the really radical Marxist district attorney in San Francisco became unacceptable, they recalled him with over 60% of the vote. You could never have imagined that happening in San Francisco.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I wish it would happen a few more places.
I agree.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The federal system still has some significant problems in having a system of supervision that isn't working and is actually increasing the rate of people going back to jail. And there is a Safer Supervision Act, which is now in Congress. Could you talk a little bit about it? Because I think it's a very important concept.
Yeah, it's a remarkable piece. The Safer Supervision Act, there's bipartisan sponsorship on both the House and the Senate. I mean, you have Senator Lee and Senator Cornyn and Senator Coons that are leading the effort. I think Senator Grassley will be a champion of it and a leader of it as well. And then in the House, you have Wesley Hunt and Byron Donalds. Why would they be wanting to change the criminal justice system? It's because they absolutely know that you can make improvements and not compromise public safety. And the improvements here, what this would do is it says, if you get out of prison, if you get a job and you do what you're supposed to do, and you've served half of your supervision, which is about 2 years, then we'll give you a presumption you can get off your supervision. And it's interesting, Mr. Speaker, because it's law enforcement that actually brought this to our attention. It's the federal law enforcement officers who said, you know what? We're having to expend an enormous amount of our budget supervising everyone when there are individuals that we know we don't have to supervise that could be off supervision and we could focus on the more dangerous. So we think this bill will actually improve public safety.
Well, you know, there's a classic case that someone brought to my attention about Daniel Lynn Brown, who almost 2 decades ago was convicted of drug charges. He served 15 years and was released under the First Step Act, which President Donald Trump signed into law. He was placed on a 10-year federal supervision, which began in April of 2020. Nearly 4 years later, Brown has committed zero violations. He's also maintained full-time employment as a project manager at a construction company, purchased 2 homes, and been a devoted father to his 5 children. But he's still under federal supervision. He's not allowed to travel without approval from his probation officer, which has led him to turn down numerous work opportunities, including what he called a dream job, helping ex-prisoners turn their lives around. Random drug testing and check-ins with his probation officer take him away from work and family obligations. Even though he poses no public safety risk, Brown remains trapped in an ever-expanding government bureaucracy. But under this proposed Safer Supervision Act, he would have a clear path off of supervision at the halfway point of his term. He would receive guidance on how to request early termination, whether he qualified for presumptive early termination based on his good conduct and compliance, the factors weighed by the court, and the ability to request legal counsel if needed. So you can see in this one human case how big a difference that the Safer Supervision Act could create. And in your judgment, is this the right direction for the country?
Yeah, I think that's a perfect example. Now, people come back and they say, well, what about the ones that are really violent? Well, the Safer Supervision Act carves out the exceptions for individuals who are violent or individuals who need lengthy supervision, those that have victimized children, for example. So this will really get at the heart. And if you ask any prosecutor like myself, who spent almost a decade as a federal prosecutor, I did well over 1,000 felony cases, I can tell you, I know every single one of those defendants that could have taken advantage of this. And I would predict, you know, zero recidivism on many, many, many of those. And every prosecutor knows who they are, knows that they wouldn't need to be supervised for 3, 5, 7, 10 years, which is what happens. So it is the right direction because, and the First Step Act proved it, those that have been receiving programming under the First Step Act, the federal recidivism statistic right now, general statistic, is 46% recidivism rate in the federal system. But under this First Step Act, it falls below 10%. That is phenomenal. It teaches us that in giving them the right programming, giving them incentive to better themselves actually works.
Think about that at a human level. Not only is this saving money for the taxpayer, but that's an enormous number of people who are reacquiring the right to be a free American in a way that is healthy for the whole country. And I think that out of that whole long-term effort, that right on crime really emerged as a national campaign of the Texas Public Policy Foundation. Can you take just a minute first and tell us about the Texas Public Policy Foundation, which I've worked with for, I think, 2 decades and is an astonishing institution in general. And then let's talk a little bit about right on crime.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the high points of my career, my long career working in the criminal justice system, to work with the Texas Public Policy Foundation. This is men and women of incredible faith and intelligence and work ethic that really just want a better place for their families and for the communities across this country. And so they get involved in all the big issues. But about 15 years ago, they started an organization called Right on Crime. And they started that because they started to recognize that we could make policy changes. We could start to redeem people. And so they started out very humble in a few states and working on a few issues. And then they started working on the national issues like the First Step Act. When I was persuaded by a very persuasive Texan to take the helm of Right on Crime, we've now gone from 5 states, we're in 15 states now. We are growing and expanding. And the reason is that we are an organization that can make changes to the criminal justice system without forgetting victims of crime and without compromising public safety. And it's interesting, Mr. Speaker, we're now seeing, I'm getting members of Congress calling me or reaching out and texting me weekly. I'm getting governors across the country that they want to know what are our thoughts, what changes can be made so that we can better our criminal justice system. And it's not just the system we're trying to make better. We're trying to do as you outlined. We're trying to save families. 95% of everyone that is incarcerated gets out of prison. And we've forgotten that they get out and they've been in worse shape most of the time when they get out than when they went in. And so they recommit crimes. And we can do better. We can make them better and part of our community by using faith, by using education and training, and really remembering that that's our obligation as brothers and sisters on this earth.
You know, when Chuck ultimately retired and then passed away, Pat Nolan, who himself had ended up in prison as an assembly leader in California, picked up the flag, and I've worked closely with Pat. And part of the reason is the human side. The more people we can help continue to lead a full life, the better.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's stunning to realize that prison systems today cost the states over $50 billion a year, which is up from $11 billion in the mid-1980s. Prisons have been the second fastest growing area of state budgets, trailing only Medicaid, and consumes one in every 14 general fund dollars. So there's both a practical taxpayer conservative reason to do this, and there's an extraordinarily powerful human reason to do this. And I think that it's really important for us to recognize both sides of that. And I think that the kind of things that you're doing really make the case for a conservative criminal justice reform.
And thank you for that and pointing out we have so much work to do. But think about this. One in three Americans has a criminal record now. That's one in three have a criminal record. You know, we went from during the Reagan years, there were roughly 4,000 to 5,000 criminal statutes. There's now well over 300,000 criminal statutes and regulations with criminal penalties. And so we give all this money to the criminal justice system and there is no accountability and virtually no transparency. We need to start holding our criminal justice system accountable so that we can save the fabrics of our community, these individuals. And if we're getting one in three right now with criminal history, that means we need to do better. We can do better, and I want conservatives to lead on it.
I had worked with Pat Nolan and with Van Jones, and we organized in the Obama years a national conference on criminal justice reform. And to my delight, my home state governor from Georgia, Governor Nathan Deal, gave the keynote address. His son had become a drug judge in Georgia. And from his experience in the courts, he said to his father, we're going about this the wrong way. We're taking people who could be saved and who could spend the rest of their life as good citizens, taking care of their family, working, being taxpayers. And the way we mishandle it, we are now turning them into being isolated from the society and having no future and being a constant drain on the taxpayer while breaking up their ability to take care of and relate to their family. And I was so proud of Nathan Deal for this speech, which I am sure, from the standpoint of a typical national liberal, was a great shock, because here you had this very solid conservative Georgia Republican making the case for compassion, for an intelligent approach, for real reform. And I think that's how we have to approach this. And I think that one of the reasons I was so excited to have you join me to talk about this is that I think that Right on Crime is one of the most important from a human standpoint. The number of lives you will help save is so dramatic that it's really a big deal. The people need to realize that they should contact their House and Senate member and should encourage them to be actively involved and to help pass the Safer Supervision Act. But in addition, they should check in with their state legislators and with their governor and see how their state is dealing with prisoners as they get out and whether we are maximizing the chance for them to have good lives or we are, in fact, putting ourselves in a position where they're going to go right back to jail and continue to be a burden on society. So I think what you're doing is really, really important. And I think it's a very important topic for all Americans to be involved in.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I couldn't have said it better. And I loved watching, you know, your powerful voice and your thoughts on it. And it really takes leaders like yourselves. And, you know, I remember Doug Collins and some of the effort that he made. And I now look at Governor Stitt in Oklahoma, who said, we're going to make changes and we're going to fix this broken criminal justice system. And that to me is heartening because we can comfort ourselves, the politicians, legislators can comfort themselves and pass longer mandatory minimums and think that they're doing something. But in reality, they're not reducing crime, they're not reducing recidivism, and they're certainly not redeeming members of our community. And so let's do that. Let's let the conservatives lead so we don't have bad policies like no bail and no prosecution prosecutors out there. Let's punish criminals. But let's also save human beings.
Well, and if people come to your site, rightoncrime.com, learn what you're doing, they can learn about the kind of practical, common sense, proven to work reforms that they can then take to their state, make sure that their state gets in line too. And we could, over the next few years, have a genuine revolution that saves lives, saves families, gives us healthy citizens who've learned their lesson, and who are committed to spending the rest of their life being a part of our community in a way that is so much better than the kind of prison-centric model that we currently have.
That's exactly right. I hope they will come to the website, rightoncrime.com, and they'll start to see that sometimes it doesn't have to be a monumental. It doesn't have to be a first step back that gets passed. You know, in one jurisdiction, we simply got the prisons to change one policy, one simple policy, and that was to allow individuals that are incarcerated longer phone privileges to talk to their family. It started to reduce recidivism immediately. So sometimes it's the simplest changes that can be made that can improve it. And that's what we look for is good, solid, conservative best practices that are proven to help the criminal justice system improve.
At Right on Crime, you have 14 policy analysts, researchers, and legal experts who are working on these things. And you've actually been active already in 38 states. So people can turn to you as a real resource in helping them ensure that their state does the right thing by their citizens and the right thing both for safety and for reintegrating people back to have a full life.
Yep, perfectly said.
Brett, I want to thank you for joining me. The work you and your team at Right on Crime are doing is really amazing. And I want to encourage our listeners to learn more about Right on Crime and your efforts by visiting your website at rightoncrime.com.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you to my guest, Brett Tolman. You can learn more about his organization, Right on Crime, on our show page at newsworld.com. Newsworld is produced by Gingrich 360 and iHeartMedia. Our executive producer is Garnsey Sloan. Our researcher is Rachel Peterson. The artwork for the show was created by Steve Penley. Special thanks to the team at Gingrich 360. If you've been enjoying Newt's World, I hope you'll go to Apple Podcasts and both rate us with 5 stars and give us a review so others can learn what it's all about. Right now, listeners of Newt's World can sign up for my 3 free weekly columns at gingrich360.com/newsletter. I'm Newt Gingrich. This is Newt's World.
The
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.